I'm a longtime fan of Bob Green. He's been on the show many times through many years to talk about many of his books. Most recently, last year, we talked about a book he wrote called Fraternity, A Journey in Search of Five Presidents. And in all the books he's written, books about his own life, about Michael Jordan, about fathers and sons and going off to war, while I considered Bob a great storyteller, none of his books touched me as much as his new one. It's called And You Know You Should Be Glad, A True Story of Lifelong Friendship, and I'm happy to welcome him back to my show this afternoon on KMOX. Hi, Bob.
Paul, thank you. Today is the first day the book is out, and to hear you say that, you have no idea what that means.
Well, I have to tell you the context in it, and we'll talk about what the book is about here in just a moment, but yesterday is the 9th anniversary of my dad's death. And so I'm reading your book about the death of one of your closest friends. At the same time, I'm thinking about that.
And I imagine that you still talk to your dad, because I still talk to Jack Roth. Maybe not out loud, but there's not a thing I don't want to tell him.
Yep. Absolutely. Talk a little bit about the basic premise of the book and who Jack was.
I met Jack Roth when I was in kindergarten, literally, in Bexley, Ohio, which is a suburban small town of 13,000 people. I was, the teacher was Miss Barbara. Her name was Barbara Drugan. She was probably just in her early 20s herself. And the first or second week of kindergarten, I was sitting in we were all sitting around her in the classroom in a circle on the floor listening to her read, and I felt something on my lip, and my nose was bleeding. And I couldn't make it stop. I pulled my T-shirt up, and the T-shirt started getting red. And, you know, when you're a kid, especially that young, you don't want to be singled out. You don't want to be, you know, you don't want to stand out. And I'm bleeding like crazy, and I don't know what to do. And I felt embarrassed and ashamed, and I sort of like wanted to sink into the floor. And a few feet from me, I didn't see because I was looking straight down. I felt someone stand up, and I heard a voice say, "Miss Barbara, Bob's hurt." His name was Jack Roth. We hadn't met yet. He'd heard my name during roll call. And, you know, he was like the rest of them. You don't interrupt the teacher your first weeks in school as a kindergartner. Bob's hurt. Standing up for someone he didn't even know. And he became my best friend and was for more than 50 years. 2 years ago, I got a call. There were five of us who ran around together in school. We called ourselves A, B, C, D, J, Alan, Bob, Chuck, Dan, and Jack. 2 years ago, I got a call from Chuck, and he said, "Give me a call back. Jack's a little ill, and I want to explain it to you." And Jack, out of nowhere, had been diagnosed with the kind of cancer that you don't necessarily get better from. And all of us, A, B, C, D, J, we went back to our town, and we decided we were going to make however long we had with Jack about whatever death might be coming, but about his life. And You Know You Should Be Glad is the story not just of that year with Jack, but of friendship itself, because what you learn is that friendship is everything. Friendship is the one thing that doesn't die. The best friends you have, it's all that matters and all that should matter. So the book is the story of both our year at the end, trying to recapture everything we'd had in our life, and the years that came before, because the one thing that's not written about much is the power and the beauty of friendship.
Now, you spend most of your adult life in Chicago, Illinois. Your work and your fame came from living in that town, but you're originally from this small town in Ohio, Bexley, Ohio.
Right.
And you went back there with all of these guys who you had grown up with there to find some of the places that you had grown up in?
What we did was we went back there to be with Jack. I mean, you know, we didn't ask him what he wanted or what the agenda was, but what we found was we found ourselves revisiting all the places. I mean, it was a year filled with laughter. It was when we were kids driving around in Allen's blue Ford during the summertime. The song by the Supremes, "Where Did Our Love Go," would come on the radio, and you know, the baby, baby. And we'd reach our hands out the window, we would bang. In time with the baby, baby, we'd bang our hands on the roof. We thought we'd lost that forever. In that last year, we became those guys in the blue Ford again. We were going everywhere we went. Jack wanted to taste his life. He didn't say it out loud, but he wanted to walk the streets he'd walked with the guys he'd walked it with. He wanted to go to the stores and the pizza places. He wanted he wanted to savor everything we'd had. You know, we used to spend our summer nights sitting on stools at the Tottle House, trying to solve our problems over cheeseburgers and hash browns and banana cream pie at midnight. And when you get older, you drift away from each other, and you think that's gone. And what it turned out was Jack's last gift to us, without even him knowing he was doing it, was we got that back. We got the friendship back. Here we were, ABCDJ, brought together once more by Jack. It was as remarkable a year, both for what we all went through together and more to the point what we remembered as any I've ever had.
Was Jack the only one of the five who still lived there?
Jack and Chuck both lived in Bexley. Dan lives in Central Ohio. Alan lives up in Canton, Ohio. And I, as you say, live in Chicago. But we just didn't see each other that much over the years. And yet, when we went back, because we didn't want Jack to go through this by himself, and not out of any altruistic reason. It was for ourselves, too. We wanted to have that together. So we hadn't seen each other again like that in many years. And it was like the best friends you have in your life, you'll find that it's like a conversation that may have been interrupted, but you still pick it up in mid-sentence. You know? You've never heard laughter like that before. You never felt as at ease as that before. And we walked with Jack through that town, and we went to the pizza places, and, you know, guys don't say things to each other. Guys don't have to say things to each other. We knew what we were feeling, and we knew. And Jack would look at us anytime. He never talked about the illness because the year wasn't about the illness. He looked at us if anybody brought it up, like, just drop it. We're not here to talk about that. You know, you got doctors to give you the bad news. what you got friends for is to not only give you the good news, but to be the good news.
And also to rag on you.
Listen, absolutely. There was, if anybody had sat down at a table with us, they wouldn't have known what the context was. I mean, the insults were as sharp as ever.
Yeah. I always say no one makes fun of you like your very best friends.
And that didn't stop. And you know something, Paul? Had it stopped, it would have ruined the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, Jack was still Jack. He was as uncomplaining a guy as I've ever met. When he told me the diagnosis, and this is a guy who never smoked, you know, watched his diet precisely, went for a run and worked out every day, and then boom, out of nowhere, this cancer. And when he told me about it, here's how he summed it up. He got the diagnosis, and it was as bad as it could be. And he said to me, I got dealt a hard hand. And that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was our cue, which is like, okay, you got dealt a hard hand, we're going to play this game out.
Talking with Bob Green about his great new book, And You Know You Should Be Glad, A True Story of Lifelong Friendship. It's just out today. It's the Paul Harris Show here on News Talk 1120 KMOX. A few years ago, and my daughter's going to be 12 next month, and I guess when she was about 5, 6, maybe 7 years old, I took her back to the town that I grew up in, where my mom still lives. We'd been there quite often, but on this particular visit, I took her to see the elementary school that I had gone to. Because, you know, it's still there. It's still this three-story brick building with the kind of shades that you have to pull down with that long pole.
Yep.
And all that sort of stuff. She's not familiar with that sort of thing. It was a little alien to her. But I also wanted to see what it looked like from my perspective because I hadn't been there in, you know, I don't know. Last time I'd been there was probably 40 years ago or so.
Yep.
And I noticed that everything was a lot smaller.
We stood outside the school buildings and looked at, because Jack had put a, you know, they've got one of those commemorative plazas in the front. Some schools have to sort of raise funds for the schools.
Yeah.
And a lot of people put their own names or their family's names. And Jack showed us what he had done. And this was years ago. He'd done it, never told us about it. We were the only brick that didn't have a person's name. It was ABCDJ. He'd put the initials of the five friends. But we walked behind the school, and there was, you know, there was the baseball diamond, and he said, do you remember when Gary Herwald hit the home run, the first one of us ever to hit a home run and separate himself from the rest? I mean, yeah, you look at these things. Jack's front lawn of the house where he grew up, his parents' old house, there's a little tiny slope on the lawn. I mean, if you or I were walking past it, we wouldn't even notice it. It's that gradual a little slope. But when we were 5 years old or 6 years old, we pretended we were Audie Murphy, the most famous combat hero of the Second World War. And we would put sticks in our hands, and we would charge up the hill, that little tiny slope. But when you're 5, your legs don't, you know, your legs make it feel like a mountain.
Right.
And we called it Audie Murphy Hill. And he and I, every time we walked around that last year, we went back to his old house, which is, you know, no longer his. And there was the hill. And it's just as tiny now and just as, you know, almost imperceptibly gradual. And I said to him one day, you know, you want to walk up the hill. And he said, I can't. At 57, it had become just as daunting to him all of a sudden as it had been at 5.
And that sort of playing when you were the kids was part of your common ground, and sports, too. Always a common ground. Well, nowadays for girls, but when you and I were kids, much more for boys than for girls.
Oh, the first time after we the friends decided to go back to Bexley and get together with him, on the way from the airport to his house, I made the cab stop at his old house. He still lives in Bexley with his wife and daughter. Lived in Bexley with his wife and daughter, but I stopped at the house he grew up in, and I looked up at the bedroom window where he used to be as a kid, and I remember we used to tape shoeboxes over the bedroom door and roll up pairs of his socks, and we would play shoebox basketball every day after school. And you talk about sports, we would keep score, and it was a whole universe right in there.
Absolutely.
Yep. And I stood there and I remembered those games, you know, and you wouldn't think you'd sweat, but you're shooting and sweating, and you've scotch taped a scorecard up to the wall.
And you did your own play-by-play.
Absolutely. And I stood and I watched that window for a few minutes, didn't know who was living in there now. And then I went to his house and got out of the cab and walked up to the door, and he opened it. And you don't have to say anything, you know, just that nod of the head, and here we still are.
Was Jack's house the house that all five of you would hang out in?
Not really, because his dad was not a wealthy man, and his dad did not have the biggest house in town, so we would go there a lot. It was certainly the house that he and I would hang out in when we were 5, 6, 7 years old. But when ABCDJ, Alan, Bob, Chuck, Dan, and Jack formed, you know, we would hang out in one of the guys' house who had a bigger house. There was just more room. But Jack was... What I'm about to say is, I mean, it's going to sound like hyperbole, and it probably is, but the reason I say it is because it applies to whoever's listening to us. It applies to someone in their life. Jack was the best person I ever knew. He was my best friend, and he was the best person I ever knew. And what matters about that is not that he was the best person who ever lived, but there's every person who's listening to us has the best person he ever knew. And they're not wrong in thinking that. That's what friendships are.
Bob Green, the book is And You Know You Should Be Glad, A True Story of a Lifelong Friendship. And you can tell from his words here today that friendship has an extra special meaning in this case. We'll come back and talk some more in a moment as the Paul Harris Show continues on News Talk 1120 KMOX. Talking with Bob Green, one of my favorite writers. His new book is called And You Know You Should Be Glad, A True Story of Lifelong Friendship. Literally lifelong. One of the guys he writes about here is friend Jack, who he had known since kindergarten, and knew him right through his 57th year when he died of cancer. And this is about their lifelong friendship and three other guys. And when you have five guys like that, is there one person who's the middle spoke and everybody comes off them, or was it kind of an interactive thing between all five of them, Bob?
Well, you know, when you're a kid, you don't think about that, but we realized as we grew older, you know how they say of some athletes, especially basketball players, that the reason you know he's great is he makes everyone around him on the court better? That was Jack. You know, he made us better just by being around him, because you didn't want to disappoint him.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like he was the leader or the disciplinarian. You know, it wasn't that he wanted to do it. It's just like there are certain people in your life you don't want to disappoint. And even now that Jack's gone, when Alan and Dan and Chuck and I go out to dinner, the guy who's not there is there. Because, you know, we'll start throwing the insults around, and maybe it'll get a little bit sharp and a little bit... you know, we may get it. Somebody may have a little bit too much to drink, and then we sit back and we think, we wouldn't be doing this if Jack was here, you know? Because it's just with Jack, things were just leveled out, smoothed out.
When I knew you were coming on today and after having read the book, I wanted to ask you about something, and I know it's sensitive. So if you don't want to talk about it, that's okay. But when you were here last year and we were talking about your book, Fraternity, A Journey in Search of Five Presidents, you and I, off the air, talked about the death of your wife, a great loss in your life, and how... you found it hard to figure out what you were going to do next and all of that sort of thing. And in this book, And You Know You Should Be Glad, you talk about Jack kind of stepping up as only a friend can during that major downtime in your life. Do you mind talking about that?
Yeah, I don't know if I can get through it, but I'll sort of briefly. When my wife did die, you know, you just don't... My kids and I, we didn't know what to do. And... the phone rang. It must have been ringing before, but I didn't hear it. and it was Jack, and I didn't want to hear any voice, even his. And I knew he'd be offering to help. And he said, I'm in Chicago. And I thought he was saying, I thought he was offering to come to Chicago, and I was going to thank him. But that wasn't it. He had heard, and he had caught the first flight in the morning. And he said, I know you don't want to see anyone. He says, I've checked into hotel. I will sit here in the room as long as you want. Don't feel you have to call. If you need me, when you need me, I'm here in the room. And that's what he did. He sat there, and he waited, and I did need him. And basically by his silence and sitting with me, because some people, the ones who know you best, they know when the best thing to say is to say nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget it. And even at the end with him, at the very end, there were about 3 weeks to go, I think, maybe more. We didn't know at the time. And Jack always loved pizza from a place called Rubino's in Bexley. And it was raining one day, and I went out and I got a big pizza and carried it to his house, which probably wasn't the smartest thing in the world. And I carried it up to his room, and he had oxygen tubes in his nose by that time. And he looked over and he said, "You brought me a pizza?" I mean, both approvingly, like, yeah, he loves pizza. And does he really look like a guy who wants a pizza right now? And I said, "Nah, probably not the best idea." And I said, "I've been walking around. I can just walk some more and come back later." And Jack sat up and he said, "Green, what are you wearing?" And I had like a windbreaker and jeans, and they were soaked from the rain. And I said, "You see what I'm wearing?" He said, "You can't wear that. It's almost freezing out. It's pouring rain. Look at you." I said, "I'm fine, Jack. I got two shirts on underneath. I knew it was going to be a cold, wet day." He says, "You can't go out like that." And he started calling for his wife. He went, "Janice, Jan." I said, "Jack, don't yell. It can't be good for your voice. You're not." His wife came upstairs. He says, "Look at Green." He says, "He can't go out like that." He said, "I've got a black heavy jacket down in the closet by the kitchen. Make him wear that." And she looked at me, and she said, "You know, he's going to ask me when he wakes up. Put the jacket on." And so I went down there and went out for my walk. And, you know, at the end is at the beginning. I mean, here he is toward the end of his own life, and what's he doing? He's looking out for me.
Mm-hmm. Just like he said to Miss Barbara, Bob's hurt.
Yeah, I mean, full circle, you know, full circle.
Does your son have friends like that?
Yeah, I think he does, and I think all, you know, I think the secret of this, Paul, As I mentioned, today is the first day the book is out. But in the last couple weeks, from what I understand, you know, the crates of the book have been delivered to stores. And something happened to me that's never happened before. I got emails from a couple bookstore employees who had opened up the crates back in their storerooms before they were to be put out today on the shelves and read the book. And they each wrote me, and they said that after reading it, they had picked up the phone and called their own best friends. We've all got someone like that.
Mm-hmm.
We each do, and we don't. It's on the one hand, there's the universality of it, which is we've all got it if we're lucky, and then there's the utter specificity of it, which is, you know, with me it's Jack, with everybody who's listening it's somebody else. And when you and I first started talking today, you know, I mentioned that you probably still talk to your dad in a way,
yeah.
And I still, there's not a day when I don't want to tell Jack something, and I do. I don't talk out loud. It's not like I'm, you know, nuts and saying it into the air, but I'll smile when I see something, and it doesn't die. It doesn't go away. The best friendship like that is so strong and so immortal that when you have something to share with someone who's gone, you're still sharing it because he's the person you would always have told it to.
You know, there's a concept in comedy called the callback, where you make a joke later on about something you had referenced earlier, and everybody is in on it because they knew the earlier joke.
Uh-huh.
To me, good friendships are all about callbacks. Like, I've got a friend named Steve. He lives in Los Angeles. He and I knew each other from working, not even in the same place, but in the same town in the early 80s. And we don't talk every week or even every month. Sometimes 2 or 3 months go by, and we can pick up the phone and talk for 10 minutes, and at some point in there, there's a callback to something that we said the last time we talked or 8 years ago when we talked, some stupid little reference to a movie or a TV show or something between us that we both remember, and that can only exist between really good friends.
When we all got back together the very first time after we found out that Jack was going through this, we went to this steakhouse on Main Street in Bexley called The Top, which has been there forever. Our parents used to go there. And we're sitting around the table, Alan, Bob, Chuck, Dan, and Jack. And I told a story that I was looking on the internet, and I put Dan Dick's, his name is Dan Dick, I put his name in a search engine, and just to see what would happen. And what came up were these words: will the following students please report to this office? Dan Dick, Bob Green. And what had happened was, in high school, we were both in the varsity tennis team, and after practice one day, we went to the locker room, and the Latin club at the school was having its annual banquet, and the Latin club advisor, a woman named Opal Wiley, had ordered chicken dinners from the banquet from a restaurant called the Willard, or Willard's Restaurant, and for some reason, they'd stacked up all the boxes of chicken in the locker room. So Dan and I come in after practice, we're hungry, we look at each other, and we figure who's going to miss two chicken dinners. So we each ate one. Well, the next day at school, or 2 days later maybe, from the loudspeaker during homeroom period, will the following students please report to this office? Dan Dick, Bob Green, the principal, C.W. Jones, had found out that the chicken had been stolen and found out we did it. So I'd written about it at some point, and the internet sucks up every piece of writing that ever exists.
Yep.
And so I'm sitting at the table, and I'm telling this story, how you put Dan Dick's name in this certain search engine, and what comes up is, you know, will the following students please report to this office? And Dan looks at us and says, I didn't steal any chicken. I said, what? He said, I didn't steal any chicken. I said, Dan, it was 40 years ago. You stole the chicken. Everyone knows that. That's not the point of the story. The story is the internet. You stole the chicken. And he said, well, I don't know what it's doing on Green's computer. I mean, every personality is the same back then. These guys start throwing down their silverware. You know, it's the memories you have from them need no, what's the phrase you use, callback?
Yeah.
It needs no reference point.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
I didn't steal that chicken.
The book is called And You Know You Should Be Glad, A True Story of Lifelong Friendship. Bob Green, back in a moment on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX. Bob Green's brand new book is out today. It is the featured book on my website, harrisonline.com. It's called And You Know You Should Be Glad, A True Story of Lifelong Friendship. The title, of course, comes from the Beatles lyric in the movie, in the song, She Loves You. Music a huge part of the life of the five of you growing up together?
It was, and the way the title came up was when I was back home with him during that last year, we were all over at Chuck's house for dinner. And after dinner, we're sitting around, and this was all new to us, what we were all going to have to go through with Jack. And Chuck and his wife had on an old Beatles Greatest Hits CD in their sort of sound system in their house. And She Loves You came on, and that little phrase of melody came by when they sing, and you know you should be glad. And I sat there, and I thought, that's it. That's what this is about. This is however long we have, however long this friendship of all of us is allowed to last, it's not going to be dark. And it's not going to be covered with clouds. We are so lucky to have had this friendship, all of us. We are so lucky. And I thought, that's it. And you know you should be glad. We should be glad we've had it. We should be glad we've got the opportunity to finish it up together. And I knew then that if I ever wrote about it, that was the theme. Because that was going to be the theme of the year. This was going to be about Jack's life. This was going to be about laughter and summer nights and good times with the best friend you ever had. And you know you should be glad about that.
And I know as a writer, you're always looking for inspiration for what you're going to write. Did you know at some point this is going to be a book?
I kept a journal for myself. See, Paul, what we didn't know, and yet we know we began every day during that time with hope. We didn't know if or when the story was going to end.
Mm.
So now we know how it ended, but we didn't. We were hoping there'd be some miracle. But I wanted to sort of keep track of it, and I noticed during it that, like, Jack would tell me things about his life he'd never really told me, like the story of his own father, which he'd never told me in detail. And then when I got back to Chicago, he would call me, and he would make sure I had every detail right. So he knew that I was paying very close attention. But I didn't start to write it until after he was gone. And unlike other books I've done, I told no one about it until the entire book was finished. I mean, there was no publisher waiting for it. There was no, you know, there was no deadline. I wrote every word of it. I fine-tuned it. I got the final manuscript ready. And only then did I tell anyone I'd even done it, because I realized this is, if you're doing this for the right reason, which is to get the story of friendship exactly right, just write it, and the rest will take care of itself.
Did the book write itself easily? I know the book doesn't write itself,
never,
but you know what I mean.
They never quite do, but some books, you sort of can't wait to get back to the keyboard.
Yeah.
I mean, some book is like, oh, I better do another 1,000 words tonight. This one, because you know what it was like, Paul? It was like talking to Jack.
Mm.
You know, it was like continuing the conversation. I couldn't talk to him anymore, but as long as I was writing the book, I could talk to him. So it was a pleasure. I mean, sometimes writing's not a pleasure. Writing this was like, I couldn't wait to get back, and I don't know what I'm going to do now that it's out, you know?
You never know what you're going to do next, and you always come up with something great.
Well, but what I'm, you know, in this case, it's like, okay, now the conversation, well, I was going to say, I guess it's over, but as you and I were talking about, it never ends.
Right.
You know?
Right. And, there are lots of great stories in here, and I don't want to make you tell them all here, because I want people to get this book. I want them to buy it. I want them to read it. I want them to feel some of the emotions that I felt as I was reading it, some of the emotions that you felt as you were writing it. But one of the things you include in here, and don't tell the story, but you talk about things that Jack wanted to do at the end of his life before he died. And my question for you is not about that, but did it make you make your own list? Is there a Bob Green list of things Bob Green has to do before he dies?
No, there really isn't, because what I found is who would ever have guessed that one of the things that would have meant so much is to reestablish this friendship with the five of us. You couldn't have put that on a list.
Mm-hmm.
The important things, the best things, have a way of finding you. You don't have to find them. And I've always had faith that's what will happen. Had I said to Jack and Chuck and Dan and Alan 5 years ago, you know, we really ought to get together and try to get back what we had, it would have never happened. It found us, and that's sort of always the way, isn't it?
How's the friendship with Chuck and Dan and Alan now?
I've talked to all three of them in the last 24 hours. I mean, it's Jack's last gift to us. We're best buddies again like when we were kids, and the reason, as always, is Jack.
The book is called And You Know You Should Be Glad, A True Story of Lifelong Friendship, and it is wonderful. Bob Green, always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Paul, speaking of friendship, thank you for yours over all these years.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Bob Green here on The Paul Harris Show. It's News Talk 1120 KMOX.